Everyone got one. What's your opinion? This is the rap room. Tongues won't be bit. Ain't no rules, just spill it. And anybody can get it. No limit. We here to kill it. You tuning into the thrillers. And no, ain't no stopping. Any topic, even the random.
We get to random.
I hope that you ready. We entering in the zone soon. We on a grown shit. Welcome to the rap room.
That's it. That's all I got to say.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. And you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it street, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what?
2015. Hello, people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's up, Lisa Colt Jam?
I know, it's been a minute.
It feels like it.
I know, it feels like it.
It's only been like 2 weeks, but it feels like it's been longer.
Yeah, but you know what? It's been a really busy 2 weeks for you.
Yes.
Filming, editing. You're in the middle of editing right now.
I've been in editing on two projects.
Oh, my God. And you just finished doing stuff at the WGA.
Mm-hmm.
And just a lot of stuff.
Well, let me give a couple shout outs.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, to Faux Show. It's up live, everybody. It's in the web series. You guys can go watch on fauxshowtv.com.
F-A-U-X.
Mm-hmm. X as in Xavier.
Because you know, some of them is out there going, Faux Show, like F-O? S-H-O? And I'm like, no, Faux, as in fake, as in
yeah.
Funny.
Is that French?
Faux. Yes, it is.
Okay. Anyway, so shout out to y'all. FauxShowTV.com, or it's on YouTube. Kim Coles, Eric Alexander, Ben Patrick Johnson, Scotch Ellis Loring, Teddy Sears, Tim Bagley. I mean, it's got some names in
mm-hmm.
there. So that's something I produce. Cool ass web series comedy. The Derrick Brothers, Architects of Crime. We just did pickups the other day.
Mm-hmm.
It is the baddest freaking film I've worked on yet. It is bad.
Them some smart dudes.
It is
even though
badass.
I think they are wrong about Snowpiercer. I ain't forgot that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag fight me, Chris.
And then on this past Wednesday night, July 28th, 29th, sorry, we had at the Writers Guild the black scenes, which is something that, you know, an idea that I came up with, being on the gay committee. We have we do the gay scenes, which are like 5 minute pieces from Writers Guild members who submit mm-hmm. Scenes without your name on it, unanimous. And so much so that me and Eddie both got in. I didn't even know that he submitted.
Eddie Robinson?
Yeah.
Hey, Eddie.
Yeah.
Really?
Eddie submitted, and there was actually some slack from some people thinking that me and Eddie might have got in because we were part of the committee, but I had no idea. It's blind.
Yeah. So don't get mad if your
What's that suspect?
Okay.
Okay. We going to get in today with your shit needed to be done today. Okay. You should have got it right, bitch. You should have got it right.
Oh, and Tamiko Brooks was having her say, yeah, Tamiko.
She wrote a cute scene.
Yeah, Tamiko is one of those ones, like, when I first came to L.A., mm-hmm. Tamiko was one of those people that, you know, to watch her career trajectory and just mm-hmm. watch her just progress and become this really, really great writer. Mm-hmm. So it's really awesome when you see somebody, when you saw them.
She's
like,
the one who wrote a scene for that. She just spitballed a scene. She just wrote it a couple of days before. And it is one of the best. Matter of fact,
because Tamiko got it like that.
Because I did the order of the mm-hmm. show, and I made hers last because I wanted everybody to hear like the funniest one at the end.
Oh, that's so great. Tamiko,
so did you go out?
Tamiko, you got to come on the show, girl, and talk.
Call
her up and get her on here, because she's one of those people that, it's like under the wire, mm-hmm. and I always watch. Every time I see some great stuff happening with her, I'm like, God, she's such a damn good writer.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
Shout out to Tamiko.
So anyway, so those of you who don't know what you're listening to, this is the Screenwriters Rant Room. And on this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture. But our focus is always screenwriting, stories, or compelling stories, craft,
get it right,
and shit like that.
And shit like that.
Exactly. So you guys already heard her. That's Lisa Bulacaja.
Mm-hmm.
We call her the street nerdist
because
she's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
She got long dreads.
Look at that.
Just went and saw Ziggy last night.
Okay, yeah, okay. So what had happened was, fam, was, so in Del Mar, you know, we got the racetrack. So I don't normally let these people know this publicly, but I'm a... I goes to the racetracks
mm-hmm.
and I bet some monies mm-hmm. and I be boxing stuff, doubling down, and you know, mm-hmm. and I talk to the horses and the jockeys.
You talk to them?
Yes.
Oh, you
like,
be down there on the floor?
Look,
on the ground?
Look. Yesterday, I was down because we went to go see Ziggy Marley. What they do is they have a whole summer concert series. So they'll have like the horse races, and then at nighttime they bring out like the big muckety mucks. And
they're on the like on the green area.
No, they have like a separate like area. Okay. Like it's right next to the track.
Okay,
but they have you know a big performance area.
I said they probably don't want all them people
and
trancing.
Oh God,
around
Ziggy was amazing. Like he was amazing last night. But I was there, and shout out to Second Summer, the horse in the ninth race, who came in second. Even though I had bet it that he would play somewhere, I was disappointed with Joe Jockey because I went down to the fence. Because, you know, when, right there, they're taking them to, you know, where they get ready to get in the little box to go run. You can actually go down and look and say some words to them as they're kind of trotting by and then going by. Okay. So I'd be like, look, Gonzalez, I'm going to need you. Because one of the ones that made me mad, it was called My Sweet Addiction.
Uh-huh. And I love went, all the names.
I love. And so My Sweet Addiction, I think it was like, it must have been like either the seventh or eighth race. And I was like, My Sweet Addiction. And I saw the name of the jockey. Mm. So I went over there and like kind of, you know, said the name like, hey, you know, I got $2 on you.
$2.
This is big money. This is big money. You better
bless
come
your
in.
Hands up if you win.
And of course, horse came in last. Mm. Like it just did it to spite me. But anyway, yeah, so I'm excited about that. Just so you know. And I was doing research. Because I have a screenplay I'm going to write that takes place.
I'll let you slide then.
Yeah.
So you need to know how the bet works,
I was there.
Right?
I need to know, and my research purposes, I have to go several times. Uh-huh. And beer is part of the research purposes. Okay. And a glass of white wine.
And a glass of white wine.
And I will be there again probably next Saturday. Because Thievery Corporation is going to be formed afterwards.
There is a cool scene in Peaky Blinders. I don't know if you ever watched that show. It's a show on Netflix. Mm-hmm. It's about it like a mob, gypsy group in England. Mm-hmm. Like they're like way up north, like probably Manchester, mm-hmm. Liverpool, somewhere like the really industrial area. Mm-hmm. And they in like the I think it might be the finale episode, one of the main episodes. They finally get the bad guys and the cops and everybody to go to the racetrack, mm-hmm. and the whole episode takes place at the racetrack.
Damn it!
And how they
outsmart.
The cops and everybody, it's badass too.
I like that.
But they didn't have the technology we have now, so it was easier to make things happen.
I always thought I wanted to do a contemporary, almost like a kind of fun crime kind of thing, almost like in the vein of like an Ocean's 11, but kind of cooler.
Like a heist mystery of some sort.
But it takes place in one day, mm-hmm. at the racetrack. Okay. And at the end, the diamonds or whatever it is, I figured it'd be like the hat day when they have all the fancy ladies come out with their jewelry and their best hats. And the idea was at the end, the diamonds were in the race horse the whole time.
Oh, cute.
And
then the
person who was taking care of the groomer gets away with it because they take the horse and take everything.
Like they're a pauper or something.
Yeah, and then you don't realize that they were really something else. Okay. Kind of that kind of Usual Suspects kind of thing. So, you know, so...
I'll say go for it.
So when I'm at the racetrack, you know, I'm there for research purposes. Mm-hmm. I'm not just there putting down money, even though I put down some serious money last night because one of them bets, it was like the pot was like $500,000. And I was so damn close. I was so close. And then at the concert afterwards where I could like, you know, dance and shake my dress.
So once you guys are in, if you got in there before 6, you can go.
Yeah, if you get in there at a certain time, it's like $6 to get in. Oh, but it was funny because after 6 o'clock, it's like $20 to get in to go see the concert. So you can get in and it's really fun. And like I said, it was for research purposes. I would have to do some more research next week. Yeah, I was sad because I missed out on Saturday Night Sci-Fi. So shout out to Geek Soul Brother because they had another good movie.
What's up, Geek?
And I was like, oh, I'm gonna miss that because that's like one of my favorite things to do. Like. Because you get to, it's kind of like global. It's like everybody, and it's fun to read everyone's comments about the same movie that you're all watching. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with Friday Night Horror. It's just fun. Mm-hmm. And so I always get sad when I have to miss. I mean, I was having fun, but I miss all the snarky comments and just stuff that has
I don't usually have time to join you guys, but I try to retweet it at least. So the people know that it's going on so they can join.
It's so much fun. You know, and you don't even have to like tweet or, you know, you don't have to be as clever. Because we got some silly folks. Because last week we did The Fifth Element. Mm-hmm. And somebody on it, I can't remember who it was. I storyfied it. I might post the storyfy up on our Facebook page for Screenwriters Rant Room.
Explain to people who don't know what that is. What is that?
Storyfy?
Yeah.
Oh, y'all know what Storyfy is. Basically, it's you can take tweets or whatever.
I didn't know until you told me about 20, 30
minutes
ago.
Basically, it's like, say, for example, there's a certain conversation. It could be in different places. It could be on Facebook. It could be on Twitter. And basically, Storyfy is a place where literally you can like put together a story so you don't have to like try to like go through tags and figure out what a conversation... It's a way to like create a narration in a conversation. For example, last week we did The Fifth Element. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about how originally Prince was supposed to play that role, and Prince turned it down.
Wow, I did not know that.
And then Chris Tucker had the role. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were discussing how the movie probably would not have been the same had Prince played that role. And
but somebody, he could have done it, though.
He could have done it. And the reason why we believe that is because I can't remember. And whoever it is, hit us up on our Facebook page and tell. I may have to go back and look in the thread. But somebody has started a thing called Prince in Space, like, and then started doing GIFs of Prince.
That's funny.
As if he were Ruby Ride and certain scenes. Uh-huh. And I threw something up in there, too. And it was funny. So I did a little Storyfy about that. It's like if Prince is in space, as if he was a Ruby Ride. So if you look on Storyfy, it'll say Prince in Space. And it'll have the hashtag of Saturday Night Sci-Fi. But the Storyfy was just an easy way for me to pick out, instead of going through all the threads, pick out the ones that have to deal with Prince, if Prince is playing Ruby Ride. And then I put it together so you can kind of look on Storyfy and read the tweets in order. To get an idea. So it's all these different GIFs of Prince. But as you watch the GIFs, you just imagine this if he was Ruby Rod, and it works. And I also have a Storyfy on there about my Blade reboot. So if y'all want to know my Blade reboot with, you know, and Boucher Wright and Lupita Nyong'o. And
you mean the fan fiction one you're going to write?
Yes, I did. Yes, my fan fiction. I have one on Storyfy, too, because I think I need to start using Storyfy. Definitely. Just to get some of my ideas out there that are playful. Anyway,
okay. That was me. Talking about movies.
Yes.
Let's go on ahead and just get it in.
Because we were having this conversation. I thought we need to talk about it.
We were having a conversation. We're a few weeks in, but we got to talk a little bit because we talked about Dope, right?
The movie Dope. It was on our list. It was on our list in the beginning of the summer.
It was. We hadn't seen it yet at the time, but now we saw it opening weekend.
Yeah,
both
of us. Yeah, we saw it open. Yeah.
To support the thing. We were blasting it. Fortunately, only did $16 million. Yeah, that's a shame to America. But, you know, it is what it is. Maybe on VOD or some other shit, it'll
it's
come
hard,
back again.
Like the tagline said, it's hard out here for geek.
It's hard out here.
It is hard out here for geek. And America, you showed it. Well, let's be fair, though, because what was the budget, like
$600,000?
$700,000. $7,000? You know, $16,000. It made its money back, but I think our feelings, our hurt feelings, is because we feel like it should have made a whole lot more.
Maybe it's personal. It's kind of like, we're talking about N.W.A.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we haven't seen the movie yet. The movie hasn't come out. We're still a few weeks away.
Yeah, we just rode through Hollywood and saw the big giant thing on the side.
Everywhere. I was watching a UFC fight and they were stepping on Straight Outta Compton. Okay, it's
Straight
like
Outta
everywhere.
Compton.
You know, now that is a really big PR blast. But of course, they got Dre and Cube.
Well, like you said, you were saying
Universal behind them.
It's iconic. Yeah. Historical.
Yeah.
And you know, you got that history, and let's be real, you got Ice Cube in it. Y'all can fight me if you want to.
Okay.
But if Ice Cube was not in N.W.A., I don't care how many beats Dre can lay out in a track. Personally, without Ice Cube, without O'Shea Jackson, okay, I don't think they, because he's the poet. Like, it was funny when I saw the trailer, they have like little things that talk about what each character in the movie.
Oh, really? Okay.
Is like it says one, like for Ice Cube, it said he's the poet.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the Flash and they had the thing. And you're goddamn right, he's the poet. So, like, honestly, if he wasn't in the group, I probably would not be going to go see the movie N.W. I would probably go just for being a hip hop head and understanding representing Cali, understanding the changes and trends in hip hop music and how important N.W.A. is in the scope of hip hop culture.
Sure.
You know, but in terms of, like, I was not a huge N.W.A. fan because of the lyrics, but goddamn those beats.
Yeah, I mean,
rolling down the street. You know what? And I was like, and then Ice Cube would come in, and I thought, God damn it. You know, and I had to respect the world that they were talking about, even though it wasn't my, even though I had to maneuver in some of those spaces, because I had cousins in Carson and some of living Compton. And I remember in the old days, babies, we used to have cassette tapes.
What's that? What is a cassette tape?
And it's a little plastic square with two circles in it, and it literally has little brown tape, sometimes it can be gray, and you put it in a machine, and you play it, it loops around, and sometimes you have to take really good care of it. If you leave it out in the sun, it would warp up, or it would snap, your tape would snap, because you're rewinding and forwarding. They don't have a good like you have it now, where you can just press whatever song, and it comes on, and you couldn't do that. You had to like scroll forward and forward, you know. But it was like, I remember getting those mixtapes. Like, y'all need to. And back in the day when we had to hold up tape recorders to the radio and tape, make we your did. Own mixtapes. And, you know, just being blown away by these hood brothers is out here. And then the whole story of Eazy-E funding with drug money, it was like,
But see, that ain't a new story.
It ain't new.
You know, Too Short did it. I mean, we can go down the list of people who did it.
But wasn't NWA first, though? I mean, Too Short came out at the same time.
No, they were...
About the same time. I'd
say he probably was before them a little bit.
You know what? He may have been.
But he was in a whole other part of the, you know, even though he was up north.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
But I remember... Well, you know what? I take that back. I think you're right, because... Because my sisters and all them, they were a few years younger. They were heavily into it. I remember they would get all these tapes, and I would listen. And when we go visit our cousins in Carson, and it'd be like... Oh, we got this. Oh, you got to hear that. And what was so shocking was because it was like the cussing. And not that the East Coast rappers didn't cuss, but these dudes was like, and they was talking about telling you how to, we cutting up these and these ho. And it was, it really was like, it was like listening
to angry.
Donald Goins.
It was kind of angry. It was, I always compare it to punk rock. It was like black people's punk rock.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Even though you and I know, there was plenty of black people in the punk rock too,
right?
You know,
right.
Despite what, which is why we love Dope,
right?
Because Dope showed you that side of it,
right?
You know, they were a punk rock band, for God's sake.
They were all in there, but but the thing is, we try to act like, you know, these groups, this type of music, was separate from all the different type. They were all around there together. So even though you may have
rebellion,
you may have R&B groups that were coming out during that time who were hanging out with these people,
correct?
You know, and it's like, these are just the different forms of their art, the art took.
Well, we talk about Sly and the Family Stone an example. I mean, he was, to the normal person, I mean, he was like Hendrix. I mean, they looked like punk rockers. Outsiders.
I'm still trying to sell nerds. That script. I'm still trying to sell the Sly and Family Stone.
You need to freaking do that freaking script and let somebody find. Matter of fact, I got somebody, if you wrote that script, that I can note that you can send it to, who's been what do they call it when people are like giving you chips, like trying to get you to do something? What do they call that? Courting me, if you will, to come over to their company and write something for them. I'm like, y'all need to give me a contract, you know, but they only want to focus on biopics right now. So they read my Sylvester and they read my Rebel Yell, and now they want to go into business. They're like, Sylvester is like up our lane. This is what we want to do. I'm like, well, damn it, let's make a deal.
Because mine's like a road story on the search for the ultimate Sly and Family Stone record that had all the signatures, and this person's trying to get Sly and Family Stone's record. And basically, it's about a band. What's interesting, it's about a band led by a female who was influenced by this group, and they have this record, and they're like, oh man, I want to give this to my aunt if I can get that one last. So it really is that story is dovetailing between this band and current time. And then what Sly and Family Stone was doing, because both these groups are pretty similar. And it was just a way for me to get into the story to just show people how iconic Sly and Family Stone fucking was.
Really?
You know, one of the first multiracial groups, you know, and putting just changing music. And it's so hard to find good biopics that has good music. And I think that's why also I'm looking forward to seeing NWA's movies, because I just want to see how they spin that story.
Because the music is going to have to move the story forward.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see how they use the music to move the story forward.
And I want to see Ice Cube's son, Baby Cube.
Oh my God, he looks just like Baby Cube, doesn't he?
I know. He looked like...
Little eyes.
His boys looked like him. I don't know if you remember one of the early Ice Cube albums when he had them on the cover. When they were toddlers, and I was like, they look just like
that. I thought
daddy.
That was him when he was a baby. That's
I know,
interesting.
Look just like him. It's like, oh, look at Baby Cube. What do you call a baby Ice Cube? Little cube.
I guess.
Little cube. I don't know. Popsicle cube. Funny. I don't know. It's so cute.
So let's get into this. So since we're talking about Dope, let's just get into really quick before we get into your thing today.
We'll do another episode of the compelling stuff.
Oh, okay.
We'll just do.
All right, we'll talk about that. So let's just talk about like the things that we liked and the things that maybe we didn't like.
Okay. We'll start with things we liked.
Go on. Because I got a lot that I liked, and it might be one or two things.
Yeah. Well, number one. I love the casting of the three main characters.
Yes.
I especially Diggy.
It was a diverse cast.
Yes.
Period. All the way through.
Oh, my God. And to me, it felt true to life because it reminded me of, even though that they were like dressing and acting like and loved music from the hip-hop music from the 90s period, you know, I grew up in that 90s period with that music. So to see them, like, have a love for that, and I remember the high-top fades. I remember those type of... I mean, just the music throughout the entire movie.
It took me about 10 minutes to realize that it wasn't in the 90s or in the 80s.
Oh, God, yeah,
because
you
didn't realize it, because I thought... But then they would show the hip-hop dudes or the drug dealers or whatever, and I was like, wait a minute, he wearing some new shit.
Right.
And it didn't cross me that he was wearing, like, when he stole his shoes. That those were new shoes of today.
I love the name of their band.
Mm-hmm. What was it again?
It was Oreo. But they spelled it differently. It was Oreo, but they spelled it differently. But it was Oreo. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that they were doing, they were like Afro-punk. It was like a mixture of punk. It was just
different. Some of the songs they did,
the songs were actually freaking good. I'm like, y'all need to stop playing and actually be a band and go out and do that shit, you know? And, you know, it was like an homage to my friends who enjoyed hip-hop, but were also into Fishbone, were also, you know, 24/7. I mean, just the different type of punk bands and punk, that mixture. Because I remember going to like music fests like in the 90s and just what it's like to go out and be like the only few black people. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, we're kind of hanging around.
They don't have
with
a long
friends.
Ass t-shirt on.
Yeah, and... but we here to do our thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it just brought a really good nostalgia factor. And it kind of, like I said, it paid respect that there are those of us who were there who enjoy that type of music, who were alternative, but we were still black.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of times people call alternative black people...
Like we trying to be white, which is the complete opposite. You know, like, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but like, it just reminds me of when I got into the whole mod skinhead punk rock scene, the Rude Boy scene.
Yeah.
I was schooled by these two black dudes who told me all about, you know, black music and soul music and how the white dude stole this and blah, blah. And I was like, wow, I thought y'all motherfuckers were trying to be white. He's like, no, they trying to be black, if anything.
I mean especially the punk scene. I don't know if anybody's seen the documentary called A Band Called Death. Yes. They were like in the early 70s, like the first real, truly real black punk band. Mm-hmm. And they were doing some serious metal music and punk music. And they were so different that people couldn't even...
They weren't ready.
You know? Mm-hmm. And then when you get these other bands, you know, that come out later, it's like you think, oh, they were the first ones. But what it tells you is that we've always been there. Mm-hmm. We've always been doing that music. Mm-hmm. A lot of us get shunned in our own community because when black people do something that's a little bit different or away from the norm in certain black circles, a lot of times people think, oh, you're trying to act white. That's not it at all. They're just trying to create their own space. And because we don't have the language to talk about what that means, the default is always, oh, you're trying to act white.
Do you think...
And that's not the case.
I can relate to this, all right? Because I wasn't sure until I started hanging around the mods and the skinheads either, right? I didn't know anything about it. So to me, it was like, oh, that's some weird shit or whatever. Because all you know, especially when you grow up in the hood like we did, it's a small community. Mm-hmm. And for the most part... you stay within those 10 blocks. Mm-hmm. You know, you hardly even go to the white side unless you go into the grocery store or some shit like that. Mm-hmm. So it becomes that, and that's all you hear is what everybody else is hearing. It's soul music, you know, gospel music, and fucking hip-hop. You know what I mean?
I think what saved me, because I was fortunate to have one of those moms that took us out the block, that took us other places. So I was always exposed to stuff, and I was very fortunate to go to schools that back in the days, and they still have funding to take you on field trips to go to places and universities and show you that there's a world out there. My mom was notorious for being, because we had a big ass station wagon, and my mom was the one that would take all the neighborhood kids out the hood to go places, be the ones to take them to the beach, take them to the park, take them to a museum. So I kind of grew up with that, but I think what saved me really in terms of not being so myopic in the music I listened to was not only just MTV, because MTV was very white when it came out.
Oh, my God.
But there was the other show. What was it called? Is it Night Tracks? It was another video.
Oh, yeah. That sounds familiar.
I think it was Video Music Box or something.
Music Box.
Mm-hmm. And it was one of those shows where they were showing music from England and Europe. Mm-hmm. And that's when I got exposed to a lot of groups there, and they were also listening to a lot of ska, and they were listening to a lot of African music.
Yeah, because then they would play the specials and the English beat, and they were interracial groups.
God, I remember,
it was the first time you were seeing that.
The first time I ever heard Rock on the Couch, like, shall we do? I was like, what? Mm-hmm. What is this?
The Clash.
What is this? And went to the record store and got the cassette of The Clash, and just being exposed to those different types of music, and also because a lot of those European artists had a lot of black artists that they were, you know, doing a lot of collaborations with. And
well, The Clash has a lot of reggae songs on
their
own.
Oh, my God. And just being exposed, UB40, and then going back and listening to where they were getting some of those tracks from, and then listening to black groups, like, way before Soul to Soul even came out, there were a lot of black European UK singers.
I love Soda Soul.
And just getting exposed. Oh, God, I know. I remember having to go to a record store and have to order stuff before we had the internet, have to order stuff overseas, pay extra to get it, to get cassettes, things that were not being, you know, sold here. Like, they used to have, like, paper catalogs. You go through it, said, I need this specific record. And if it was vinyl, you know, you would pray, like, shit, I hope they don't break this shit when it gets here. And I paid a whole bunch of money for this, you know.
You got to spend an extra $30 for that, motherfucker.
Just for international shipping fees and stuff. And just to get access to a lot of music. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when MTV really started getting broadening their base, and VH1, of course, started to come afterwards.
Let me ask you a question.
You know.
Do you remember your first album that was yours that you actually bought? Do you remember what it is?
Oh, it's Michael Jackson.
Really? Which one?
The Jackson 5 albums.
Okay.
I was a huge Jackson and Prince.
You know what mine was?
The first non-Michael Jackson record, or Jackson 5, anything with Jackson's in it. Mm-hmm. Prince.
You know what mine was?
What?
Boy George, The Culture Club.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's my first album that I ever remember. Actually, it was a Christmas present from one of my white friends who bought it from me. It was the first album that was mine. That it was like my album.
Yeah.
He bought me Culture Club.
I mean, my mother bought the albums and records and stuff all the time. But the first one where I was like, I had a little money, it's like, I'm going to go, God, I must have been like 10, 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. And it was Prince's For You album.
Oh, yeah. Really?
And Soft and Wet. And went and didn't know what it was about. So I was like, Mama, this is the song. And he was just beautiful. And I was like, this guy, and he had like,
can you talk about falsetto?
Bro, and he was just, and then of course, you know, I had
okay,
to
he was wearing
I
nothing
had,
back
I
then,
had
wasn't
to hide
he?
When I bought the Dirty Mind album.
He wasn't wearing nothing.
When he was wearing the G string and the thigh high boots and was singing Head, and I was like, you know, this ain't the song Mama need to hear right now. And I joke with people all the time, but I swear to God, I used to tell, like, I would try to get past all that stuff and say, Mama, he likes purple. Mama loved purple. Mama, he really likes purple. And that's how my mama liked
that's
Prince.
That's how she got it.
She was like, he likes purple. He's a nice young man.
Hilarious.
But she really, it wasn't until like Little Red Corvette came out and she actually saw him on TV, because I had to hide these albums from her, because they were like Richard Pryor albums.
Oh yeah, they were controversial.
And she was like, yeah, he's wearing all his little purple. And it was like years later, she was like, he was singing those type of songs? Had I known, I don't think I would have let you have them. I was like, exactly. You know, now he's a little middle-aged man with his little auntie
little
bro, and he's just so adorable now. It's like, he's just not as nasty as he used to be. But you know, you got to remember, Prince was alternative too for a lot of us. I was into Grace
completely.
Jones. I was always attracted to those black artists that went against the grain in terms of music, who were musically free to experiment.
And the androgyny way he dressed. I mean,
God,
you can go on.
You know, and it was just, and people would be like, it gets me to this day, like the people I was into, especially black artists who were so alternative and so different. When the mainstream got a hold of them, it's like, oh, they're hip now. Mm-hmm. All these motherfuckers that was like, why are you listening to that? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, oh, yeah, nigga, you walking around with a Prince
Let me tell you. See, I got into the mod Rude Boy scene in the summer of 84. So by the time high school really got in that fall, I was getting in. Mm-hmm. I wasn't fully in the suits yet, but I was already starting to dress in my own little unique style. I was already pegging pants.
Right.
I couldn't afford to peg them, so I'd pin them on the bottom. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what I mean? All that shit. And when I finally learned how to do it and I found the guy who could tailor all my clothes and whatnot, all that peg pants and stuff, I've been doing it since 1984.
Child, look.
I had a flat top in 1984. Look. And there are pictures of me in 1984.
Child, we used to have
high top. Mine was as high as
ties.
Kid and Play's in 1984.
My little penny loafers, my little skinny ties.
Exactly. Your
my little
Pendleton.
Hats. Oh my God.
Exactly.
The little child. And then
they
it was
don't
like,
even know.
It was, and it was like, it was maddening because I felt, I mean, literally.
My
I
little black eyeliner in the mini looked like a cat right there.
You know what I mean? I used to be so mad at these people because it was like, when I was upholding this and trying to get y'all to like this, you made fun of me and made fun of that and said it's not worthy. But it took other people to consider that as acceptable for you to all of a sudden, oh, it's cool now. You know, so it was maddening in that way too. And I think that's why it's so maddening now when I see Dope Movie and the things that we like about it not do as well as we thought it should be. Well, what were some of the things that you liked about it?
Okay. For me, it's first nostalgia. That's the first. I just smiled from the time the opening shot came on. You know, and I can't even remember what the hell the opening shot is off the top of my head. But I just remember glowing. Mm-hmm. I guess it took me back to my 1984, even though it was present mm-hmm. day and he was into the future right. or into the past.
Right.
It reminded me of me because he was in the hood. I grew up in a blood neighborhood like he did in the movie, mm-hmm. you know. So it was the exact same thing. The only difference was he was dressed the way he was. I was in my suits and right. I rode a scooter. He rode
right.
a bike.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? I right. still got my scooters, and here it is, 2015.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it just took me back to all that. I still listen to hip-hop, you know, but I was more into, of course, reggae and ska and soul music and mm-hmm. 60s music. You know, if it was black and it touched me,
right.
I was into it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And people always thought because I dressed the way I did that I was trying to be white.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the complete opposite. I was all into reading... all about the Black Panthers and all that stuff. I just wanted to know more about my Black heritage at that time.
Right.
It was a really interesting dichotomy. Is that the right word?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for me, I just kept smiling throughout the entire... And I went with the Derek brothers, me and Scott. And so we just were all sitting there just glowing. Mm-hmm. And me and Will kept chuckling at each other about different moments of how it reminded us of, you know, the 80s.
When certain songs came on, were you saying some of the rap
We were sitting there.
I took my friend Taj and we were like, oh, what, girl, what, what? Mm-hmm. And we were in the theater like, okay, let us calm down a little bit. Let's not be that stereotype of those
black soundtrack
people.
Is important.
The soundtrack was just, it mm-hmm. was everything. It was like, God, I remember that. I remember breakdancing the song. Mm-hmm. I remember walking to a club and hearing that and just feeling like a glow of that music, you know, and I don't know, it was just it totally was like nostalgia road trip, like, oh my God, and it made you just want to go listen to those old, so like go to your iPod and be like, oh my God, let's mm-hmm. hear that again. And okay, what else did you like besides the nostalgia part?
I liked the characters, like we were talking mm-hmm. about the main three characters. Mm-hmm. I don't remember all their names off the top of my head, but the main kid, the little Hispanic kid, and then the little androgynous girl. I mean, they were just
Kirstie Clemons, yeah.
They were so, I don't know where he found them, but they were so perfect, each and every one of them in their own way.
And you know who else was really, really good? Mm-hmm. And I don't think people really talked about his performance as much because he reminded me of boys I went to high school with that I'd be crazy about, but mm-hmm. I didn't want to associate with because they were just into some stuff and I just knew it was not going to be good. It was A$AP Rocky.
Oh, which one was he?
He played Dom. Remember the boy, the
gang, the drug dealer?
The drug dealer, the guy who was like Zoe Kravitz, I guess her man, I guess, and kind of had the whole idea of sending, you know, the main character to go talk to her, like, mm-hmm. well, tell her this, that, and the other, and mm-hmm. that. I just thought that he was so, I don't know, his acting in it was so natural, and he reminded me of all those little black boys that I loved
mm-hmm.
From my old neighborhoods who were smart.
But got caught up.
Who didn't really have the support in terms of their academics, who were smart, who could do the work.
Mm-hmm.
But because of certain circumstances and didn't have the mentorship and the support from home that they needed, you know, found themselves in situations. He reminded me so much of this boy. Oh God, I love this kid. Wherever he is, I know it didn't end up well, so I won't say his name. But
let me tell you two more things that just occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
The escalation of obstacles.
Yes.
I mean, we were just talking about this a minute ago before we started the podcast. Every time you thought, oh, they'll get out of that, here comes another one.
You never get a moment to rest.
No, it just rode along, and it was right. The sequences were on point.
And as a writer, you're like, okay, how this is going to work? Because mm-hmm. in your mind, you're thinking, okay, they may take the path of least resistance, and it might turn out to be some of the other movies that we've seen before, like, oh, it's going to be a plot point. But it's like, oh, it's going to go up to this. For example, the scene where they realize they have, and if those of you who didn't see the movie, it's too late. You fucked up.
It's been 3 weeks.
So don't be talking about spoiler alerts or anything like that. You messed up. But when they realize they actually have the drugs in the backpack,
mm-hmm.
and they get the phone call from the other dude, mm-hmm. and they're going outside to go and give him the money, and mm-hmm. they're like, well, what do we do? And then you get the phone call from Dom going from the prison, and then he's standing right there. The dude from the car sees him. he sees them, mm-hmm. and on the phone is like, what dude? What are you talking about? I didn't send no dudes. And he's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That was one of those moments where like, oh damn, you got me.
Mm-hmm. And then the friends are like, dude, go give him the money.
And they're like, what dudes? No, dude, you better get out of there. That's not the, and it was just like, it was on. And it just
such a good reversal.
It just just went and just escalated from there. And it just kept going. And I love the fact that tonally there were different shifts throughout too. Even though it was comedy and it was funny, there were moments of seriousness where really I was like, this might turn kind of extra dark. You know?
Yeah. My favorite moment of the movie, and this is a spoiler alert.
Is the big
reversal at the end where he overpowers the businessman, the counselor, whatever the fuck he was. That to me was like, see, we can write some smart shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Even in a small movie like this, $700,000 movie, it felt way bigger than that to
me. Right,
right. You know,
right.
It felt because there was a lot of locations in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
They clearly had a lot of.
Hey, and shout out to because the moment I saw this kid, I thought that kid looked like Al B. Shore.
Oh, his son.
His son.
Yeah, he looked just like him.
Shout out to Quincy Brown,
mm-hmm.
Who I thought was great
because
he was just like.
Which one was he? Who did he play?
He was the businessman's son. The one that was...
Oh, that's his name?
His real name, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Quincy.
So he ain't got no Shore in there or nothing?
Well, he played the character Jalil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Al B. Shore is just the... Al gets Al Brown.
Okay, I didn't know if he branded that name and that's what he likes to go by. He's actually a friend of mine on LinkedIn.
Yeah, he played Jalil. And it was funny because when I saw him, I thought, he looked like a little Al B. I bet you this is Al B. Shore's son. And watching him... It was so comical because I've met dudes like that back in the day who were like suburban and trying to be this. I'm like, and what cracks me up is you see the expression on, okay, I'm trying to remember his name. Our lead character. What was his name? What's the lead dude's name?
What was his name? Hold on. Let me get through.
Anyway, the lead character in Dope, when he, as he's looking at Jalil and he's like, dude, you're not as hard as you think you are. You know, and you could just tell, like, dude, you just stunting right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to roll with it because you're not really as hard as you think you are because I live around these type of dudes and you were just like the fake dude.
Is it DeAndre? Is that the right one?
Is that what they call his character's
name? I don't know. What is his character's name?
Anywho. But to me, that was just the real humorous side of that. Mm-hmm. Just watching him look at this dude like you are not the gangster, the thug that you think you are.
Mm-hmm.
Which is awesome. So, we talked about a few things that we did like. What are some things that you did not like?
Well, I'm on the fence about this because now we're just talking about Al B. Shore's son playing this militant, you know, over the top, oh, I'm really gangster black, even though
Malcolm, that's his character's name.
Even though he lives clearly in like Baldwin Hills in a freaking with a pool and a, you know what I mean? They lived in clearly in like the Beverly Hills neighborhood. And the issue I had was his sister, who played like the total sex addict. I just want to be druggy and drinking and whatever the hell.
Mm-hmm.
I would sleep with anybody. I didn't quite understand her. And the only thing that I saw from the point of view of the writer was maybe he made Al B. Shore's son so far to the left that he made her far to the right.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that they're the kids of that, what was he, their politician? What was it? I forget what Roger's character is.
Oh, he was like a check or something where he was, but anyway, he was like a counselor.
He was some sort of businessman of some sort.
Right.
I'll just call him businessman for the sake of an argument. But almost like he had these kids and he spoiled them rotten so much that he didn't really do anything for them. He didn't treat them right. And even though they had everything they needed and wanted, they still were so spoiled that
they kind of came off as like stereotypical white suburban kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I actually look at it, where you have like these suburban kids who listen to hip hop music. White specific, because we got black suburban people too. Like white suburban kids who listen to it and they're trying to be like, yeah, yo, what's up? And you see like a real hood kid and you're trying to like impress them. And then, of course, you got the overly sexual, oh, you know, kind of valley girl type. Oh, you know, that kind of thing. And it was interesting, you know, but I've kind of seen that before, that kind of thing. But I do see your point where it's kind of like, well,
was that a writer intentional thing, just to show two extremes?
Two extremes, you know, because of the things that she ended up doing later on,
right,
you know,
right,
running out and peeing and stuff, and I mean, mm-hmm, all that stuff that she did, mm-hmm, it just felt so over the top that, like, the way they made Al Bashir's son, you know, when he would carry a gun and just, like, all these things that he did just, mm-hmm, seemed like, okay, they were pretty even in their own unusual ways.
Right.
Even though I had some issues with the way they treated her because she was a woman,
mm-hmm,
or a girl or whatever,
right,
a teenage girl,
right,
I just had issues with seeing her in that vein. She
Give me
so
some specifics.
Beautiful.
Seeing her in what way? Specifically, what are you talking about?
I didn't like how sexual they made her. I didn't understand why.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You know me. I always want to know why things are, mm-hmm, a certain way. So I wasn't clear on that. So I kept feeling like I was giving the director and writer leeway because of what was going on with his son,
mm-hmm,
you know, going, okay, well, he's so far over there, they're making her the opposite in this way,
mm-hmm,
but my problem I had with it from a male point of view, learning from you about a lot more about feminist things,
right,
I'm
right,
seeing things from a different,
right,
point of view.
Well, good for you.
No,
good,
but let's just,
yeah,
be real,
yeah.
So it's making me look at things where I would have let it go and not had a big issue. I,
right,
just would have said, oh, his character's that and her character's that.
Right, right.
And I'm like, but why?
Yeah, and I think a lot of times that comes from, in a lot of movies, they want to have, like, the sex scene, the sexual.
Mm-hmm.
They want to have, like, for a lot of films, in terms of masculinity, the idea of becoming a man is always having sex with the girl.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've had sex with, then you're a real man. Those,
sure,
kind of, like, really toxic masculinity issues that... These things that are always perpetuated and put out there for men, and they buy into that. So when I see that, you'll see that in all kinds of films, about coming of age films, especially with the male leads,
mm-hmm,
where it's always the girl is always there for sexual conquest, to get some nudie scenes,
mm-hmm,
to kind of get that kind of sexual thing there. I mean, that is part of one of my issues too with her in that scene too, but also with Zoe Kravitz's character.
Mm-hmm.
Because both of them, like, honestly, those two characters, they were so facile and so throwaway. Anybody could have played those roles.
Mm-hmm.
They really weren't that important to the story, I don't think. I will say Diggy is important because that girl,
yeah,
is just amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Casting was spot on. She was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But my concern was kind of like the diversity in the women, especially when you're having three black women, which is rare. Three black women in a movie. Oh, my God. You know, and they're not playing, like, straight up hood rats and just kind of,
mm-hmm,
like being the stereotypical. They're like beautiful black girls who just happen to be in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But my problem was, and it was something just an inkling, because I remember my friend said, I know you're going to say something about it, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, it's not a bad thing. My thing is,
well,
I wish,
wasn't quite the Bechdel test, though, was it?
No, it's just that. But it was just like the diversity of black women. You got three light-skinned black women.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, you always have these movies where it would have been nice to have a diversity of blackness with the female women. Not saying that it's taken away from Zoe and the other young lady who played the rich daughter,
mm,
who's actually a model. She's gorgeous.
Oh, my
she
God.
Is gorgeous. She's like, she's what we call what, Blasians, black
yes.
and Asian.
Mm-hmm.
And amazing. I'd love to see her in more stuff where she's not always just taking off her clothes and being the high chick, you
mm-hmm.
know, which can be fun in certain movies. But I just kind of felt like, you know, it would have been nice if we got a little bit of different diversity, and if we would have got them to be a little bit more. In particular, Zoe's character, because she was just a girl. Like, if you cut her part out in the movie,
mm-hmm.
you still could have had a movie, really. I mean, she was kind of like the, in some scenes, the catalyst, but I almost felt like she's not really bringing anything to
mm-hmm.
it. And I don't think it's one of Zoe's best roles.
No, I mean, I thought she was better in Mad Max.
I was excited to see her in it. And then when I saw her in it, I was like, oh, well, this wasn't really this ain't a game changer for her.
No.
You know, so.
And it looked like she might have done that before Mad Max. Like, she just seemed better by the time she got to Mad Max.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It could have been. I don't know what it was, but I just felt like it would have been nice to see more diversity in women, some different women,
mm-hmm.
or give them something extra to do. I don't
mm-hmm.
know. I don't know what that thing is, but it was just that little. Sometimes, you know, you're watching a movie and you don't know quite what it is. You can't really quite, but there's just something that little.
Yeah.
That little something.
It's almost like when you read a screenplay and something bumps
like,
you.
I'm just not sure what
you
it is.
I mean?
I don't know how to fix it, but just something, it just seemed like a waste, you know?
Okay.
But, I mean, other than that, like that, to me, that's my, oh, and the other thing is the whole drug issue, because anytime we have a movie about the hood, they always bring in drugs. But I would let this pass because, one, Rick Fukuyama said he was basing it on people he knew in his neighborhood and this kind of situation. And I let that go. But in the future, I would like to see more movies like this type of characters,
mm-hmm.
where it's not always like, okay.
I mean, it is an easy way out, though, if you think about it. to go that route, that if they
conflict,
get in danger, all of a sudden, you know, somehow they get tied up in drugs and now they got to escape and find their way out of it, you know, and all that other stuff. But what I do like about it is the way they found their way out was because they all were smart. Now, they did do the one trope that I know you don't like is they went to the white dude.
Y'all couldn't have found one black dude who was smart enough.
Don't they all know computers?
Don't they know? Like, you couldn't find somebody else.
So he was the savior to help them.
Get an Asian character. Get somebody different. Mm-hmm. It's always the old. Oh, and of course, I mean, I like dude because he's from Workaholics. He's fun. But it was like, yeah, we've seen that kind of dude before. Mm-hmm. Get me something different.
He reminded me of, I don't remember his name off the top of my head, in Pulp Fiction, the redhead. What's his name? He's the one when John Travolta, he was the one who gave him the drugs, and then she took too much, and John Travolta had
I can't remember his
name. Eric Stoltz?
Yeah.
He reminded me of a younger Eric Stoltz.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I mean, but what saves it from that, from being like, oh, the drug thing, is because of Dom, that character. Even though he's a drug dude, he was a good dude. Yeah. And I really wanted Dom to get together with Zoe. Like, I really wanted them to get together be the typical, oh, well, she doesn't want to go with him. He's a drug. Oh, we're going with the nerdy guy. Mm-hmm. The whole fantasy. It was like, why couldn't they have the situation where that happened and yet it bound those two together? And Malcolm would just be like, yeah, I really liked her, but, you know, they
together. Yeah, it wasn't meant.
Yeah,
whatever,
it wasn't meant.
You know what I mean?
And we've had this
I met them so that I can get them together. Now I learned.
And
to me,
that's almost like real life, because I've been in those situations at that age where it's like, oh, somebody I really like, and but they're kind of meant to be together, and you're kind of like that. It would have been a nice bittersweet, like, oh, he doesn't actually.
Because that trope kind of only happens in movies where the nerdy guy ends up in a situation with the model girl, the daughter. Mm-hmm. And she's hitting all on him. Like, it only happens in a movie.
You know, and it'd be nice, like, it wish fulfilled, but it was something about Dom that just a smart dude, caught up in some stuff, likable. And I think to me that offset that whole drug deal, you know, plot line. So shout out to A$AP Rocky for just being so adorable.
Well, he's been working.
Mm-hmm.
The Hangover 3, The Internship, Divergent. He's been working.
Yeah, he's really, really good. So, you know, you might want to hang up that rapping stuff and get into, because I would love to see him in some
Sounds
more
like
things.
He's taking it more serious, though.
You know, he's good. Like, there's something natural. I mean, he's just a handsome dude. Because
I don't even remember Tiger being in the movie. I know he was in there somewhere.
And here's the thing about it. It's like, even when I saw Dom, it's like, oh, here comes the drug. And it was like, the way he underplayed some things that I think some rapper dudes would have overplayed.
He cared.
Like, they would have came out with the more, you know,
it's more
bravado.
Swag.
Like, hey, he wasn't. He was like, yo, what's up? You know, hey, this it is what it is.
Well, remember the scene where they go to the club and the other dude who kind of looked like Al Bishir, who's the owner of the club, or whatever, the manager.
Right.
He's like, I can't let these dudes in. He's like, look, you're going to let these dudes in and this house going to be, but unfortunately, I'm going to have to whip your ass because just
on principle.
That scene, and I bet you he had to audition with that scene, because that's the scene that showed you he didn't want to do it, though.
I don't want to do it, but you know what?
I mean?
On principle, homie, I got to do what I got to do. This is the life we live in.
I got a cold cocky with this guy.
I got to do this, and you're going to have to take that. And I fell out laughing. Well, I mean, I'm hoping that we get more films like this. I mean, for us, it's like for the Blurred Nation, for those of us who are like Afropunks, those type of like... Mm-hmm. I don't even like to say alternative black people, just a different type of blackness that you see.
We've always been here.
We've always been here, and we act like it's something brand new. Mm-hmm. I think what's brand new is the fact that we have an opportunity to see a movie like that, because I'm letting y'all know right now, those
Little Richard was alternative, if you want to call it that.
Those three characters in Dope, the leak, those three, those are the type of people I hung out with when
That's
I went
me.
To school.
That's me.
Those are my child, look, my neighbors next door were Mexican across the street.
Mm-hmm.
I have my other white friend that lived down the street, because, you know, we had white folks in our neighborhood who didn't have enough money to move away. They didn't do that suburban white flight. They got stuck. But I came from a very multiracial neighborhood. I had multiracial friends. That was my clique I grew up with. So to me, that's normal to be, I mean, riding on the bicycles around everywhere. And we used to have the boombox where we had to put it in our little basket and play our cassette tapes. And I mean, I lived that life, and we've always been there. And it'd be kind of nice to see more filmmakers,
What was the main dude's name? Shameik Moore?
Well, his character's name was Malcolm.
Oh, okay. Wow. Mm-hmm. He looks so different in his headshot, too.
I know. He's a cutie.
Yeah, he was so... What's the word?
He's of Jamaican descent, so shout out to Jamaicans.
I just kept watching him at times, like when he'd be put on the spot. Oh, like the moment you were just talking about a minute ago, when he went outside with the drugs and the guys were waiting in that red,
yes,
you know, car, the vintage car, and the look on his face of the reality, the Dom is calling him, and that's something else.
And also, that's flashing in his eyes is, because the whole time the movie, all he's worried about is getting this interview for Harvard, getting to school, getting his life, and he already knows he's there. And you can see it flashing in his eyes, like, this could be the thing that fucks up everything. What am I going to do? And I was there with him. So kudos to our Malcolm, the wonderful actor who played him. You were just really realistic. You really brought...
He's in something called... A new TV series called The Get Down. Have you heard of that?
Is it a new TV series?
Yeah.
What channel? Do we know what channel it's on? I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it looks they've done a couple episodes already. They've done 13 episodes.
And also
It's filming right now.
And also to our wonderful Diggy, I love her, Kiersey Clemons. She's on Extant right now. She's actually playing a robot.
Really?
She's playing a robot.
Because she looked like she could be like a young Halle Berry, though. You know what I mean?
Gonna be better than Halle Berry.
Just mean as far as how
she's. Right. I think if she gets the right role, and I'm so excited that she's on Extant right now. Like I said, she's playing a robot, and Extant is really changing up because she's playing a black robot. They got a black alien running around that's playing Halle Berry's son. Extant is just doing. I think, and then the alien had a bunch of alien babies. He don't have babies, so all these black babies, alien babies. So shout out to Extant for, like, you know, whatever y'all doing. It's like I'm really enjoying this new season. But she's just an amazing actress, and she has so much talent. So I'm hoping she picks more fun roles like this, more sci-fi stuff, you know, and just. Use her, please. Someone cast her in something else. I want to see more of her because she was such a delight. Even though the story was about Malcolm, in my heart of hearts, I wish the movie was about her.
And that would be a different movie.
Because one, she was a drummer.
But I would have seen it.
She's a drummer. And you know I love women drummers. Yeah. I'm a huge Sheila E. fan. And I love women who play percussion and drums.
We have not seen an alternative, if you want to call it, movie about a young black girl from the hood who's into that scene.
That's my script for the Sly and the Family Stone.
Oh, is it? Oh, you can make her a girl?
She's the bass player.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, and her brother's the drummer. I kind of modeled her brother after Questlove because I love Questlove from the Roots.
Yeah.
But yeah, that kind of thing. So that's why I was so excited to see Dope, like, yes, alternative, and there's a girl drummer, and she's adorable. And the fact that they made her, like, gay and just, and didn't make a big deal about it. Love that.
They love her.
That's not even an issue. Like, she likes girls, so what? In fact, she might take your girl. you know? Watch yourself, you know? And I love that. So kudos to Rick Fukuyama for just making a really one. You know what?
I would love to interview him.
It's an instant classic.
Rick, come on the show, Jack.
Dope is an instant classic.
It is.
It's
I'm one sad
of those,
that it didn't
the
make
soundtrack,
more money.
Like at the end when he was doing all the dances and you hear all the songs, my heart was just, it was just glowy. So if you missed Dope, you have a chance to make up for it. You need to rent that or buy it or have a
When you get a
party.
Chance, you need to look at Shameik Moore's photos on IMDb Pro. There's pictures of the three of them, the kids who played in Dope. You should see how pretty. What's the girl you like?
Oh, Kiersey? Yeah.
She is
Clemons.
Gorgeous in this photo.
I would love, you know, I got to find a poster. If I can find a nice poster of that, I would frame that and put it up there.
Wow.
She's, oh, he showed me the, oh my God, look at them.
Yeah, I don't want it to come out.
Like, you know what? All right, Rick? You might want to do another movie with them at college.
You
know what I mean? He's gone to Harvard. Was it Harvard or Yale? I can't remember which university it was.
Yeah, something, one of them big colleges.
And you know what? Do another movie. I would love to see those characters again, you know, just, I don't know, it's just fun. I mean, I know some people, like my friend Taj was, you know, she had some issues with them saying nigga all the time. And you know what? That's what kids do.
I have never not been home and not heard the word all the time.
You know what? Some people, that's what some kids do.
It rolls off your tongue. It's like you go into a lot of the Mexican neighborhoods where, particularly where gang members are, you hear the word fool. Oh, fool. Bah, 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 bah. Chicken out, fool. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I hear that all the time, depending on what part of the neighborhood. It's just.
Well, I was happy to see that the her character, Diggy, that she addressed that when the white dude was trying to say it. And
she
just kept slapping him. And I was like,
that scene.
But when she said, the only thing I didn't like was when they were like, oh, you know, if you say it, we'll give you permission. I think the funny part was, I think she should have just kept slapping every time he said it. And then suddenly he just stopped saying it around her. Right. That would have been great. That would have, that thing where you don't have to really talk about it. Like she just says, like, every time you say, I'm going to slap you. All right. And then he just stops saying it. And then the scene keeps going. That would have been perfection to me.
Because then it would have represented how we feel. And she just fucking stopped saying it.
And the subtext is, you
ain't allowed, bitch.
I don't care. Yeah, I don't care how many times we say it. Yeah. You ain't got to say. And then it would have been like, oh, I see. And you know what? You can be mad because you know Hulk Hogan came out recently and said, "How come it's like Hulk? Y'all, you should have just shut it down. You messed up. You should have just been quiet and you said sorry. We would have forgotten about it a couple years." But then he had the nerve to come out like, "Well, how come President Obama gets to say it?" I'm like, "Context, bitch. Understand what you're talking about." You know? So I was a little upset with that. So, yeah. And I don't care if your friends allow you to say it, if you're white and your friends allow you to say it, that's you, between you and your friend. Don't get slapped like Diggy was doing people. But yeah, it's one of those movies that I hope people are like, as soon as it comes out on DVD, I'm buying it. I'm really curious to see what the DVD special features is going to be. I would love to see a documentary, something on the making of it.
Oh, my God.
Just want to know more about it.
I mean, Hollywood. Okay, let's look at this for a second. And I know we're going to cut this short, but look, fuck it. We're going in. Hollywood, look at this. They made the movie for $700,000. So far, this is just domestically, it's done $16 million. If that's not profit, even on a low scale, for any production company, distributor, that is a huge hit for them, you know, to make that much money back.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say they put in $2 million to promote it, right? Because usually you do like double or whatever it is to promote it. So it costs $700. Let's just say they put in two, maybe three.
Mm-hmm.
They still made how many times more?
Okay,
that?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
What's the rule? Was you have to make three times?
Three times.
Whatever your budget was to even break even.
To break even.
Now, because we're not even counting advertising costs.
No.
You know, promotion, all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm hoping, man, I would love for them to like go overseas to Europe and have a big screen opening over there. Because we know that.
I think it would translate over there.
Go to Japan, Asia. Because
London
because
particular,
it's
hip, it would translate.
Oh my God,
translate.
It's like,
yes.
Because of the hip-hop
France,
music
mm-hmm.
and the band. I mean.
Asia, it would translate, I think. I know they don't think it does.
Yeah, because they always think that.
They buy more albums
people,
than we do.
Oh my God.
Shit.
They always, Hollywood always thinks that films with people of color in them don't sell. When we know for a fact that black culture, period, sells globally everywhere.
What did Jay-Z say? He went over to Tokyo and they were waiting in line for him for like 3 days. Didn't he say some shit like that in his life? Okay, because that was new to him.
Uh-huh.
He was like, "What? They know me like that?" We're like, "Yeah, motherfucker, they know you like that."
And if you were smart marketing, you would push it because there's a huge. I mean, just I don't know. I just get so frustrated when I feel like you could have had a whole platform to build this movie on and have gone out just not in the United States, but you could have gone to parts of South America, Central. Hip hop translates everywhere. It's the music of the people. And
here's my other point.
Look at that.
It just occurred to me.
See how excited this movie
makes
us? It
just occurred to me, though. But see, this is what movies are supposed to do. It's supposed to make you have a conversation.
Right.
Here's one thing that did bother me didn't even occur to me. I was so like, ooh, that's the jam. It didn't even occur to me. But yet, they were a punk rock group. But they never played any real punk rock that I remember. It was always, except for their band, I don't remember hearing a soundtrack.
No, I think their band was playing the music.
But he kept saying how much he loved hip-hop of the 90s. And I'm like, shouldn't you say I love hip-hop of the 90s and punk rock? Or something? It just felt like it needed another...
Or maybe they just couldn't afford the rights to some of the punk rock songs.
Well, damn it, they got some of the biggest songs in the damn movie.
But you have Pharrell Williams producing. He probably talked to...
Oh, he produced? I didn't even know.
He's one of the producers. So he might have had like...
Oh, yeah. He was like,
do me a favor, homie.
Yeah.
You know.
I got $10. But I'm going to hook you up on the next album.
It's interesting, but I think what it might have been is because they want to focus on the band doing their music and not take away from... Even though we're doing hip-hop, and it would have been nice to hear like, I don't know, some Fishbone and some other stuff.
Yeah.
But...
It did make me inspire me because people tell me all the time, Hilliard, you need to do the story of you and the original Palo Alto Rude Boys back in the day when you guys came up, because it was just like this movie.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Except we got into the mod skinhead scene and became like a fucking gang. Mm-hmm. I mean, we would fight all the time. And it was like it became bad to one extent. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like tension between us and dudes in San Jose. Like it got crazy at one point.
I'm sitting here laughing. It's like, get this, they fuck. And they roll away on their scooters.
Well, you see Quadrophenia.
I'll fight you. I'll take you out. All right, we out.
Exactly. 45 miles an hour, Jack. I'm zipping. Shut up, bitch. Anyway,
oh my God.
On that note, y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. We just be going in on some shit. Today, you know, we just spitballing, just having fun talking about some shit. We decided to just go in a little bit on dope.
Yeah, it's a movie that we really enjoyed, and it's one of my favorites of the summer. And I just feel
Definitely. Go see Dope. People didn't
go see. Is it still in theaters right now?
I heard maybe not, but I
might go see. You know what? I'm gonna actually go see it one more time just to help support it again.
Yeah, and if you haven't, damn it, get it on VOD, get it on Netflix.
I'll drag some friends who have not seen it.
Yeah, watch it with a group of people, because just by yourself is not gonna be the same.
And find one of your old rap T-shirts you know you have in your closet somewhere.
Go represent
and just go have a really good time. Sneak in some tacos and some wine if you need to.
That sounds like something you've done before.
I have a whole movie
kit. Little sis, you got
I have a kit for my tacos, my sprinkle cupcakes, and I have my little flask that has my liqueur.
Her flask.
And it's a little movie kit that I take with my little blankie, and I get comfortable, and it's, shut up, it's what I do.
You ain't gonna worry me. You know what my mama would say? Child, you don't know, and you don't know, you don't know.
I'm respectable. At least I'll be coming in with soft tacos, because I try to respect people. I'm not gonna be crunching. I'll get the nice soft, that way I can eat it and not make a lot of noise around mm-hmm. people. Even though you're looking around like, who got tacos up in here?
It smells good.
So I guess that would be me.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So Lisa, where can people find you at?
You can actually find me on Bitchflix. I have a piece up on right now about Sharknado 3. Uh-oh. Shut up.
Well, put it up. Let's do it.
Sharknado 3 came out, was it last week? Yeah. And the world premiere. And
how did it do? Do you know? Did it do really well?
Not as good as the first or second one.
Because they keep killing it with this shark verse octopus and all those other mega shark verse. I'm like, they killing it. They doing way too much.
Well, you
extra
know, they
now.
Had, and I missed it because I forgot it was coming out that Sunday, Lavalantula.
See?
They're tarantula spiders that have lava that come out of their butts.
They just...
They're giant spiders.
Y'all hear this? What I got to do with
lava,
lava that comes out the booty boot.
You need to appreciate... You need to appreciate D-level sci-fi at its finest.
At least you give it a D.
And not judging it. Because they're silly and they're fun and I love them.
Poor Ian Ziering.
Hey. You know what? He is honest. He's like, look.
He playing it straight?
Look. I got a wife and kids. His wife told him, you need to make some money. And mm-hmm. he was honest.
I mean,
like,
it put him back on the map. I give him that.
Look, because Steve Guttenberg... Mm-hmm. was originally offered that role and he turned it down, and when it became like this big thing mm-hmm. and of course once again I keep telling people that you need to thank us
mm-hmm.
the fans made Sharknado a thing
mm-hmm.
through social media and that's just because us being in on the joke and knowing these movies are terrible.
Okay, they was huge at Comic-Con, wasn't it?
Child, look. And it's like Steve Guttenberg was so upset that afterwards, like, God, I turned that down, so they gave him Lavalantula.
Oh, really?
And they had a lot of people from the Police Academy movie in it.
Oh, really?
Michael Winslow and all of them. So a lot of the actors from that are in that, because you know Steve Guttenberg was in Police Academy. So I'm going to have to check that out this weekend to catch up. But don't hate on it. So that's my latest piece over at Bitchflix. I'm on Twitter. Most of the time, you'll find me under the tags of Saturday Night Sci-Fi,
mm-hmm.
hashtag Saturday Night Sci-Fi, or hashtag Friday Night Horror, or also sometimes when I have time.
Who does all that with you?
Hashtag, oh my God, has the 80s live tweet. It's Geek Soul Brother, mm-hmm. Graveyard Shift Sisters, mm-hmm. Black Girl Nerds, mm-hmm. and a whole potpourri mm-hmm. of crazy
Speaking
folks.
Of Black Girl Nerds, we need to be, she put that thing out that they should have their own panel at Comic-Con.
Yes. So
we need to definitely put that out there.
So we're going
to
put it out for people who just go to Comic-Con, and if you can help out, or just signal boost, or just even like email them. Mm-hmm. But
let's get a hashtag
Black
going.
Black Girl Nerd, she came out, and she'd been on a several panels at Comic-Con, mm-hmm. but she has such a huge following, and she has a huge impact in terms of us blurs and us geeks who enjoy this kind of thing, that she really needs to get press credentials for next mm-hmm. year. So one of the things we tried to do was to tweet and tweet at San Diego Comic-Con to let them know that we really want her to get press credentials for next year. Mm-hmm. So that was the big
thing. Matter of fact, they should be having Screenwriters Rant Room over there. That's all I'm going to say. You know, we need to be in there doing the fucking panel.
Can you imagine us doing us in front of a live panel? That'd be a hot
mess. We've done it before.
It would be a hot mess.
It would be we would be having a
okay, because like, it would be so
can
unfiltered.
We be ourselves?
Okay, it'd be hard because we'd have to do like a what do you call it? Like a I don't know, spoiler alert, but we'd have to give something to let people know who
Oh, just
in
like
there.
A disclaimer or something?
A disclaimer, like, look, don't bring no babies up in here.
If you be in there with kids
if you sensitive, I'm just saying, you never know. If you're sensitive to language, mm-hmm. profanity, or realness, or just getting really girly, you do not want to come hang out with us. You know, because it's just silly, fun, honest,
unfiltered.
See,
we should be on the black panel. What's that? The black? What's the thing
with
you
Michael
go
Davis,
to?
Yeah.
You know, you need to reach out to him and be like, we should have him on
the
show.
Well, you know what? The rumor was that was going to be the last black panel this year.
Okay.
I'm hoping it's not. So, you know, we should, you know what? I really would love to have
Why
Michael Davis on
Why would he stop doing
here.
It?
You know, just all kinds of behind the scenes craziness stuff that happens. But, you know, we should have him on there just to talk about it because it's one
We know enough people we can have black
panels. It's one of the most popular panels that they have there. And mm-hmm. They've been doing it for many years now. Yeah. And people, like, literally, you have to get there like almost an hour or two to get in line mm-hmm. to even guarantee that you can get inside the room when they have it. So, I mean, there's just a lot going on in the blurred community. And of course, the blurred community is part of just another subset of the nerd community.
True.
So, you know, shout out to my peeps, but that's where you can find me.
Okay.
Lurking.
And I'm your host, Hilliard Guess, and you guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guess, or you can find us the
on
show.
Our Facebook page.
Yes. Guess what, everybody? We now have a Facebook page. Yay. Hilliard Guess's Screenwriters Rant Room. You guys can find us. Please like our page. Go on iTunes, because that's the one that's important for the metrics. Give us a 5-star review. We need that shit. I said it. Shut up, girl. And again, one last quick shout out. Please check out foshowtv.com. Check out the new web series. It's hella, hella, hella funny. We already got some network interest already.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's good. and what else? What else do I want to promote? No, that's it for
now. You've got so much
going
on.
That's it
for now. Good Lord.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'll be letting you guys know about some new shit coming up. And that's it for now. Yeah, give us a 5-star review, motherfuckers. Y'all know what to do. I said it. Oh, and a special shout out to everybody who's been emailing us and hitting us on Facebook. People have been sending me like messages about the show mm-hmm. and how much they love the show and how they compare us to, you know, that we're better than all the other shows. I'm like, well, duh. Of course we are. Because we just be doing some real shit. Mm-hmm. See, for those of you who don't know, mm-hmm. I'm going to tell y'all.
Oh,
I smack
popping. He's smacking
smack.
It. Go ahead, smack it.
Look, Lisa and I, 9 times out of 10, we don't have shit written down. We just talk. You know what I mean? We just...
Off the top
we might be a, it might be a topic, but there is nothing like... You might have a couple points, mm-hmm. but there's no... Here's what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, that word. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? For the most part, I mean,
most of the time, it's
out
like
of the 60 something episodes,
most of the time we'll have like a quick little conversation in the middle of the week, like, hey, we need to talk about this. Whatever's going on mm-hmm. at that moment that we think that's we need to be talking about that. Because I like the free form. I think a lot of times people get caught up in like
the structure,
more structured
of it, yeah.
thing. And I think a lot of times people just need to relax and just hear it just straight from the dome, just coming off the top.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we doing a hip hop cipher. It's like I'm coming at you.
You know, I'm spitting.
I'm spitting it right now.
Exactly.
I'm bringing hot fire.
Oh, shit. Just nothing but bars, y'all. Just bars. 16 in the motherfuckers. So on that note, y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. We keep it street. Mm-hmm. We keep it opinionated. Yeah. We keep it what? 2015. Peace, y'all.
Everyone got one. What's your opinion? This is the Rant Room. Tongues won't be bit. Ain't no rules. Just spill it. And anybody can get it. No limit. We get to kill it. You tuning into the thrillers. And no, ain't no stopping. Any topic. Even the random. It's random. I hope that you ready. We entering in the zone soon. We on a grown shit. Welcome to the Rant Room.
That's it. That's all I got to say.